Mark Suttoth, HurricaneTrack.com, here with another chapter of stories from the Hurricane Highway. In this chapter, in this episode, we're going to go over the year 2001. You know, I keep saying that they are momentous years. Each year seems to just get better and better. And 2001 was another big turning point in my career, in my journey along the old metaphorical Hurricane Highway. I appreciate you joining me for this unique podcast series where I take a look back at my career through these stories, this intimate look at what I have done, how I have accomplished, what I have accomplished, who I've accomplished it with along the way, and some stories, some inside information that you won't hear about anywhere else. They're not in any of my documentaries, etc., and that's what this is all about. I often refer to this as being very similar to a book on tape, and maybe one day, as I've hinted at, this can serve as the basis to maybe help me write a book by the same title, The Hurricane Highway. That'd be nice. Maybe after I turn 50, which is in November. Oh boy. All right, so the year 2001. Remember, I've got the Isuzu Rodeo now. I bought that in 1999. In the year 2000, I outfitted it with a professional high-end scientific grade anemometer from Arm Young Corporation, the propeller-based anemometer system. I had the proper mounting. I had the wind tracker inside that had a digital readout from that anemometer, and I had tested it one time in the year 2000 with Eddie Smith down in Cedar Key for Hurricane Gordon that came rolling in. We didn't get a hurricane. It weakened to a tropical storm, but it was a good test. You know, the anemometer did really well. And, of course, I had my Davis pressure sensor mounted inside of the Isuzu. And it was a full-on chase vehicle. That's, I mean, such a misnomer. You really don't chase hurricanes, but I guess the public and the media likes that term, hurricane chaser, chase vehicle, whatever. But the Isuzu was very adequate for what we needed to do. As small as it was, you know, it's a small SUV. It's not like what was coming in, you know, the next couple of years with a bigger Chevy Tahoe. That came into play in 2003. But to get there, to get to that point, something really, really life-changing truly happened. All right, so let's back up just a hair. In the years 1999 and 2000, this Project Impact program that I have talked about from FEMA back in the day, it was a Clinton administration, James Lee Witt, FEMA administrator, he was the head of FEMA, his program, Project Impact, to build disaster-resistant communities had grown and expanded all across the nation. Many, many communities were involved since its inception in 1997. So by 99 and 2000, the New Hanover County, Wilmington area where I lived, had been producing in a big cooperative, collective effort, a very large hurricane awareness expo. And these were done around the country in different big cities. Houston's had them for a long time. Different cities in Florida, maybe a few hardware stores, Lowe's, Home Depot would have a couple here and there. But the one in Wilmington was truly special, probably one of the biggest collaborative efforts in the country, where just about every imaginable business and industry, all the media partners, the government agencies, all got together for a massive Hurricane Awareness Expo in early June 1999, and again in 2000, and we would, of course, do that again in 2001, and I think that was the last year the Project Impact funding and the program was getting ready to wrap up, especially after the election in the year 2000. You remember what happened there, right? Ended up in a tie, and the Supreme Court deemed that George Bush had won, and so that was the end of the Clinton administration. And by virtue, you know, of course, no Al Gore administration, and things changed, and they do. And we don't really do politics here, but sometimes politics and weather do mix. And after the Clinton administration, that was the end of the Project Impact program, which was a shame because being disaster resistant is a good thing, but, you know, I don't make policy, we just do science here, so there you go. But nevertheless, we had this expo, and it was massive. You know, thousands of people would come out, and as I hinted at during the last chapter here that we covered, 2000, I was at the expo. I had a booth, if you will, that displayed my maps. I would give away these maps that I had produced, the storm surge maps, my trademark poster-sized hurricane tracking maps, and, you know, I had a display that would show computer animations that were, you know, really popular. And so what happened is, in the year 2000, little did I know that one of the representatives from Lowe's Community Relations, a gentleman by the name of Robert Eggleston, had visited in the year 2000. I probably met him, but I don't remember because there were so many people there. And he went back to Lowe's headquarters, which at the time was in North Wilkesboro. Now it's in Mooresville. And, you know, he talked about the expo because Lowe's was one of the title partners, them and Home Depot, if you can believe that. It's true. Everybody, you know, hey, disasters do not care. Hurricanes do not care about brands, right? So, you know, we all got together and put branding issues aside. All the media worked together, as I mentioned, and Lowe's was part of the big effort there. And so Robert went back and talked to his people, and, you know, my name was mentioned around Lowe's headquarters. And so that brings us back into the year 2001. So in very early 2001, probably in January, I received an invitation to come to Lowe's headquarters in North Wilkesboro and do a pitch. And I'm like, if you knew how extremely rare that is to get invited to do a pitch, usually it works the other way around. If you have an idea, if you have a product, if you're in the movie business and you want to pitch a script, if you want to pitch your pilot to a studio for a television network, whatever, you know, you have to do a pitch, and you usually have a lot of rejection when you do pitches. I think people are familiar with that. People pitch ideas in corporate America, marketing campaigns. So that idea of, you know, doing a pitch for a product, an idea, a concept, a movie script, whatever the case may be, it is extremely rare for someone to tap you unsolicited, if you will, just, boop, hey, I want you to come and you do a pitch for us. Well, that happened in very early 2001. Lowe's had done their homework. They knew about my award from 1999, and they knew about all the maps that I had done and my involvement in the Project Impact realm, my enthusiasm and my track record for studying hurricanes. And so they wanted me to come to Lowe's headquarters and do a pitch about what would it take to create a hurricane awareness program for Lowe's corporate. And I couldn't believe it. I mean, it was like, really? Wow. And so I got a good friend of mine that I had gone to grade school and a couple years in middle school with until he moved away. His name was Jason. And Jason did all of the web programming for HurricaneTrack.com, any of the really neat mouse over Java tracking maps. You remember Java? And Flash? Whew. Those were the days. He handled all of that. And, you know, remember, we had a really strong presence with HurricaneTrack.com, probably the strongest in the private sector field that's not related to media back in the day. Now there's competition everywhere, of course. But I wanted to go into the pitch with an assistant, if you will, some backup, because I was going to pitch to a pretty good-sized group of people. It wasn't just myself doing the pitch and Mr. Eggleston. There was going to be several other people, marketing, through even some people from sports management that handle, remember Lowe's used to be, their name was on the Lowe's, was on Charlotte Motor Speedway. It was called Lowe's Motor Speedway. Number 48, Jimmy Johnson and all that, NASCAR. And this was a huge moment, right? You don't just, yeah, let me throw some stuff together. I'll be up there Monday. You know, this was a really, really big deal. So in late January of that year, Jason and I went up to North Wilkesboro, and I met with these people from Lowe's. I can't remember how many there were. There's probably eight other people in the room. And it was, again, from community relations to sports management, marketing, probably their emergency management side of things, because, yes, these big companies, Walmart, Lowe's, Home Depot, Publix, etc., you know, these big retail stores, they have emergency management, and they have their own EOC. Even if it's small, they do exist. So, there we were, and I did great, and was a little nervous, of course, because this was big. You were talking a Fortune 50 company, right? And so this was a chance to change my life. And I did my pitch. I talked about what we've done and my vision for the future. What could we do with a partnership with Lowe's? And I outlined it that we could take this Hurricane Expo idea that we did in Wilmington and farm it out and expand it on a much smaller scale to any Lowe's store that is within reach of tropical cyclone impacts from Texas to Maine, if you want to. We could do our own hurricane tracking guide that's Lowe's branded and give them out by the tens of thousands to Lowe's customers. Lowe's could be the sole sponsor, the big corporate sponsor of my website. And also, by default, my research, my field work, and so forth and so on. I would basically be the pitch man for Lowe's Hurricane. I'd be the face of Lowe's Hurricane program. That was my pitch. And as many of you probably already know, it didn't take long. Within 2 weeks, maybe less, they said yes. And I remember, here's an inside story, and any non-disclosure agreements and all of that have long since expired. I remember sitting in that room with all of these upper management people, and I had no idea of how much money to ask for. And I was very honest about that. And I said, I don't know how I would even price this. You know, what in the world do I propose as a budget? And I remember one of the people, I will at least leave his name anonymous, just, you know, I think that makes sense. I remember he looked at me in the eye and said, "Don't be afraid to shoot high." I kid you not. Really said that. "Don't be afraid to shoot high." I thought, wow. And so I went back home after the meeting, and within a few days I submitted a written proposal, and I proposed, you know, fairly high. It was a good salary, if you will. It was a good budget. You know, out of that budget would be travel and other expenses, and then, of course, a salary. My fee, if you will, my consultant fee, was baked into that, and they accepted it. There was no negotiation. You know, they didn't talk me down. It was yes. And wow. And I'll put it this way. When that happened and it was a done deal, you know, that we knew the contract was going to be signed, and they got on it right away. It was finalized by like March. We went ahead and bought a house, my wife and I. And at this point in time, our two boys, and we had a third child on the way. We were going to have a daughter. And so, yes, I had enough to put a sizable down payment, you know, more than just a couple thousand bucks, on a house, our own, you know, our first house in Leland, in west of Wilmington, over in Brunswick County. Land was still fairly cheap. You could still get a house for, you know, about $100,000 back in the day. 2,000 square foot house. I think it was like $107,000 or something back in the day. Maybe it's a little more than that. I don't know. But that's what we did. You know, and it really changed my life, as you can imagine. So, boom, all of a sudden, I've got a contract as Lowe's hurricane guy. You know? And boy, they treated me like a king. Reached out to me for advice, allowed all of my creative needs to be met, if you will. You know, they never stifled my ideas. We got to work right away, and we set up five or seven smaller Lowe's Hurricane Expos that I would host. I would be the guy that would go to these cities and, you know, sort of be the point man, you know, hey, we have a hurricane expert on site, and his name is Mark Suddeth. You know, that's how it was going to work. And I remember the very first one was down in Texas, in Lake Jackson, I believe it was. And it was in May of that year. And Mike Farrow, you remember I had Mike Farrow on with me, part three of 1999. Mike Farrow went with me. I talked him into going with me. And, you know, because all of his experience dealing with hurricanes in the media on radio and the Project Impact program, he went with me. So we did. We flew out, and Lowe's had a tent, several tents, and they, you know, got their parking lot. I told them what to do. You know, we need to get people to come out. You got to promote it. You know, it's a big hurricane awareness day. Get the Red Cross out there, who's, you know, Lowe's is a partner with the Red Cross, National Weather Service. And so Corpus Christi came out, and it was remarkable. We flew into Houston, rented a vehicle, drove down to Lake Jackson, went to Lowe's, and, you know, they knew about me. You know, hey, Mark, nice to meet you. We've heard a lot about you. Gosh, it was remarkable. And you know what? I'm going to... A little brain fart. It was not Lake Jackson. It was Victoria. My fault. It was Victoria. We would actually end the Lowe's Hurricane Expo tour in 2001 in Lake Jackson. There was two in Texas that year. The very first one was in Victoria, Texas. My bad. Yeah, it's a lot to remember as I try to recall these stories. But it was Victoria, Texas. And thanks to the guy that works inside my head that keeps in... track of all the files you gotta go through. Remember that movie, if you're a Pixar fan, called Inside Out? And it's got all those different characters that represent emotions like anger, you know, and fear and whatever. Well, they should have done one about the guy that keeps up with all your memories, your files. They kind of do, but, you know, whatever. So the guy that runs my file cabinet in my brain, shout out to him for helping me remember that it was, in fact, Victoria, Texas, where the very first expo was held under the Lowe's Hurricane Expo brand. The media came out. It was a big success. Hundreds of people showed up, and everybody was talking hurricanes. And you know, later on down the road, in early June thereabouts, we had another one that was scheduled down in Louisiana. I believe it was Baton Rouge, but that got rained out, believe it or not, or it was Lafayette. There you go. I remember it's coming back to me. It's Lafayette, Louisiana. And that got rained out because of Allison. Remember Tropical Storm Allison that just, you know, devastated parts of Southeast Texas, including Metro Houston, with, at the time, you know, record-setting rainfall that has been surpassed by Harvey, and in some areas even by Imelda in 2019. But, you know, yeah, the expo there in Lafayette was rained out, but visited Savannah, Georgia that year. Of course, we had the one here in Wilmington. Also went down to Tampa, St. Pete for a Lowe's Hurricane Expo there. And the ones in the Southeast United States, I drove the Isuzu. And, you know, it was this hurricane chasing SUV. The media liked that. I had a little bit of archive B-roll footage I could share. And, you know, I got interview after interview. I was in the paper. Remember newspapers? Yeah. I was in the newspaper. You know, I would be on any online articles that they may have. And lots of television and radio. We did one in Metairie, Louisiana in 2001. I remember that one because I had like almost complete laryngitis the day before. And as I drove down there, and I had to be up really early, like at 6 a.m. That's really early for me, to do radio interview, the WNO or whatever it is, New Orleans. Or is it WWNO? Anyway, it's the WWL. I know I did an interview with them. And or maybe it was WJNO. I don't know, whatever. But lots of media, and that was exciting. I got very good at talking in short bursts instead of long stories. Sound bites, talking points, right? I started learning all of this. I had training from Lowe's Community Relations and their public relations. There's two different branches there. And it was really, really exciting. Partnered up with a lot of different people to help me. Eddie went with me. Mike Farrell went with me on a couple of these, as I mentioned. And it was a really good time. It was a road show. It was a tour, you know? And I wouldn't trade it for the world. It was really, really exciting and very big for Lowe's to have this program. The only big company in the United States, probably of any company, that was doing anything of this magnitude at all. Walmart wasn't doing it. Home Depot, any of the other major outlets, you know, didn't exist. Lowe's was the leader in this field, and it was really, really a privilege for me to be able to head this up. And so another thing happened at the 2001 Hurricane Expo in Wilmington that would also change my life in a little different way and change his life as well. Through the website, HurricaneTrack.com, which of course was Hurricane99.com in 1999 when it started, you know, it grew quickly. And remember, I was doing these hurricane tracking charts, these posters. That's the more, that's the more accurate. They were posters. I'm telling you, they were huge. I was doing these for lots of TV stations, including WAVY Channel 10 in Portsmouth, Virginia. And they would promote them on the air, you know, the 2001 Wavy Hurricane Tracking Guide is now available. And I remember they gave them away at Farm Fresh up in Southeast Virginia. And just to kind of refresh your memory, I was doing these tracking posters in Norfolk, Portsmouth area, Charleston, Wilmington, Raleigh, and Charlotte, I believe. And all of these different areas, except for Southeast North Carolina, they just paid me a fee. They went and got the advertisers, the sponsors, got the artwork. I told them what to do. And at this point in time, I was producing these maps myself, 100% on my own, on my Macintosh. And, you know, it was good money. I will admit, I was making a living just from doing that. So Farm Fresh was the distributor in Southeast Virginia. And a guy by the name of Jesse Bass had heard about it on the TV, probably went to Farm Fresh, picked it up. Of course, my website's on all of these. You know, for more hurricane information, visit HurricaneTrack.com, right? And he went to the website, learned about me, and he emailed me at some point and came down to Wilmington in early June 2001. He said, my wife and I are going to come down to the expo. It would be great to meet you. He said he does photography. He loves weather. You know, he shoots on film, of course. Back in the day, it's pretty much DSLRs were prohibitively expensive at the time. And so he said he's going to come down to Wilmington for the expo. So sure enough, that's exactly what happened. Jesse came down and came out to the expo, to Trask Coliseum. Many, many thousands of people came out to that expo again that year. And he introduced himself to me. He brought, I remember he brought like a photo album. He was nervous. I remember this. He looked at me, I don't want to say like a celebrity, but, you know, he was a fan of my work, you know, just now only really a couple of years into the website, etc. And he really admired what I was doing. He said he loved severe weather, you know, always wanted to be in a hurricane himself, etc. And, you know, we hit it off, and he offered up that if you ever need any help around the area, you know, let him know, and, you know, he'd be glad to help out in intercepting a hurricane somewhere. And just there was just this rapport, and you could just tell that we would get along, you know, if that need arose. So we talked for a little bit at the expo, and he went around and collected different things, and he and his wife went on back to Southeast Virginia. So that seed was planted, right? I met Jesse because of the Project Impact Hurricane Expo. And of course, at that point in time, I had the Lowe's contract and that gig. And, you know, my life was good. You know, the funding was there. I had my new house, you know, moved into the new house in late February, early March, whatever it was. My daughter was born at the end of March. So things were just, you know, couldn't get any better, right? And in all of this, also in the spring of 2001, I got contacted by a couple of what they call villages. Yeah, that's what they call these places. You know, down in Louisiana, they're called parishes. The counties, they're called parishes. And some parts of the country, towns are called villages, either informally or formally. So the village of East Rockaway and the village of Freeport in New York on Long Island, their Project Impact people, coordinators, whatever they were, these two villages contacted me in the spring of 2001 that they too were Project Impact communities, the village of East Rockaway and Freeport, and they were interested in doing a big hurricane awareness project, and they wanted to marry it with nor'easter awareness, that they get storm surge flooding from nor'easters as well. And at that time, a recent event was 1996, where they had some pretty significant flooding in that part of Long Island from a nor'easter. Nor'easters, of course, are a different type of storm, but they're, you know, kind of like the wintertime cousins of hurricanes, right? And so negotiations had begun. What would you charge to consult and produce a big multimedia project just like what you did in North Carolina and then Georgia? I added Georgia. I did storm surge mapping for the six coastal counties in Georgia. I had gone to the Project Impact Summit that we had, and the National Hurricane Conference was up in Washington, D.C. in 2001, kind of a weird place to have the National Hurricane Conference, but I was everywhere. I was meeting people right and left, and my name was getting out there, and projects were just getting thrown my way one after the other. It was almost overwhelming because I did all of this by myself, right? And so this was exciting, something for the Northeast. And, you know, they do have their own fairly rich hurricane history up there. You know, the great New England hurricane of 1938 comes to mind, 1944, and others, you know, and the most recent one in this era, and even today, is Bob, 1991, Gloria, 1985, and then many, many nor'easters, as I talked about, that can cause flooding and other problems up there. So negotiations had begun on exactly what we would do. They were going to get a big partner. And they were looking at partnering with State Farm as their major private sector funding partner. And they would use public money, taxpayer money through the Project Impact program. They would get their own media. And it was exciting, you know, to say the least. Hey, I could be doing something in New York, of all places. And So that began, and then we got into the hurricane season. You know, all of this kind of mixed up together. And, you know, the season forecast to be fairly busy, no major El Nino threats, anything like that. And so we waited, you know, with big anticipation. When would the first hurricane of the new century, you know, hit, right? We're in the year 2000. We had no hurricanes hit the United States. Would it be 2001? You're right. So I was ready. And so during the summer, sometime in, I think it was July, you know how July is. It's usually pretty dead in the tropics. You know, the season just wasn't looking real active yet. And, you know, okay, we had Allison in early 2001's season in early June, big flutter. Is that a word, flutter? A big flooding historic hurricane or tropical storm, Allison. And until we get through Imelda and the hurricane centers and the WMO, that's the World Meteorological Organization's designation of whether or not Imelda will be retired, tropical storm Imelda from 2019, Allison still, if memory serves, is the only tropical storm name to be retired off the list of names that we use. It's true, because of the damage and the death toll and the impact that it had on parts of Texas and southwest Louisiana. So anyway, Allison came and went, and we were waiting for Barry. Tropical storm Barry, or whatever it would be, you know, when is Barry going to happen? So July, usually pretty dead in the tropics, as you know, and I was just determined. You know, I kept thinking, we live in an era where pretty much everybody has a cell phone now, albeit probably a flip phone. Maybe you have a more sophisticated, what we call a bar phone. It did. It looked like a little candy bar. It was about the size, a little bit wider and longer than a Milky Way, maybe. But they were called bar phones. Sanyo had them. Who else? Samsung, I think, was a leader. You know, obviously nothing from Apple yet. That was going to be a few years down the road. Quite a ways down the road. But it existed. The cellular network in the United States was up and coming. And I had heard from Jason, my web programmer, my real good friend who lived and worked up in the Raleigh-Cary area of North Carolina, what we call the Triangle. He worked for the SAS Institute, Statistical Analysis Software, one of the most successful privately held still, it's not a public company, software companies. It's kind of like the Microsoft of the East. And he worked for SAS. Jason kept up with, you know, all things website related for me, handling the back end, server maintenance, you name it, Java programming and whatnot. And he knew all about my hurricane exploits, my desires and my grand ideas for the future. And the number one priority for technology in 2001, I was never at rest, ever. Never sat back on my laurels. Okay, I got everything I need. I'm good. You know what it is. I wanted wireless internet. I thought there has to be some way to transmit zeros and ones through the air. Come on now. And Jason told me that he thought that Sprint had data cards, you know, what they called an air card. And you might want to go talk to Sprint. Sprint was very prevalent, especially along the coast. And, you know, he said, you should go talk to Sprint. So I did. I went into the Sprint store here in Wilmington. And this would make the folks at Sprint cringe. But, yeah, you know, it's just part of the story process, right? This is a true story. I went in and told them, you know, immediately salespeople come up to you, as you could imagine. Hey, what can I help you with? And, you know, I said, well, I am a singular customer right now. It was Singular Wireless, Singular with a C, C-I-N-G-U-L-A-R, something like that. And a friend of mine, a colleague, said that Sprint has data, you know, that you can get me, like, I can use maybe my phone for data, maybe have an air card, you know, what? And then, oh, well, I think we do. It was really funny because they didn't really know. And they had a little kiosk and a little display area that talked about Sprint data and that you could tether your phone through a USB cable or something like that. It might have even been serial. I don't know. But you would use your phone, a certain phone. You had to have a specific phone designed for this, that your phone could use data. Sprint data network, probably, I would assume it was 1G, I guess. Certainly no more than 2G, obviously. And I believe they said it was like 28.8 kilobits per second or something like that. Or maybe it was 50 to 70 kilobits per second, because the Sprint data spectrum is different than your dial-up modem. You know, where we used to either 28.8, 36, or 56K. And I think that the Sprint spectrum, it was no more than 70 kilobits per second. I know that. And I think that was at burst speeds. They didn't really know much about it, though. That's what was funny. And they were going to try to demonstrate it for me at their little display area. But apparently, nobody else in Wilmington needed wireless data. So they never really had an opportunity to showcase it, and nobody knew how to operate it. And so I had funding, and so I purchased a Sprint phone. It was a Sanyo bar phone. So it's not a flip phone, right? It's a bar phone. And it came with a tether, a little data cable, and some instructions on what to do. I don't remember how much it cost. I just don't. Money was not a problem back then. And I bought it. And I had an agreement. And I guess it was just part of their operating procedure anyway, that if this does not work, I had, a week or 2 weeks, I could bring it back. And they would cancel everything, no penalty to me, so forth and so on. So I went home and, you know, I was like, it was like Christmas Day. I opened the box. You know how it is, you electronics geeks out there. You open something new and you can just smell the electronics. You smell the silicon, whatever. Maybe it is silicone too. If something is sealed with silicone, you smell the electronics. It just, if you're an electronics geek like me, a tech geek, you know what I'm talking about. You open those boxes and you're just like, yeah, all right. And I followed all the instructions, downloaded the drivers, whatever I had to do. And I had an HP laptop, and I fired everything up and turned on the modem, activated it, whatever, through the phone. And it said it was connected. It was like a dial-up manager that would come up separately, and you would see it doing its thing, and you got a little signal string thing, and it would connect, and you were in. And, okay, good, I'm connected. And so I opened my browser. At the time, it was probably Internet Explorer. And the very first website, okay, here's a trivia thing for you. If I ever become legendary and, you know, you have a trivia, whatever, if I'm a Jeopardy category one day, how about that for being, you know, delusions of grandeur? What was the very first? Of course, I know it's different on Jeopardy. You have to form it in the phrase of a question or whatever. But the first website that Mark visited, the answer, what is the National Hurricane Center? Yes, that would be it. That's correct for $200. Only a $200 question. The National Hurricane Center, nhc.noaa.gov, was the very first website that I visited using my wireless data connection. And I remember I called Jesse. He and I had stayed in touch a little bit. And I was like, dude, you wouldn't believe it. And I told Jesse and I told Jason. And I was like, oh, I got wireless. And it was incredible. And I remember I put the laptop in the Isuzu. The Isuzu had a built-in inverter so I could power AC powered equipment, and off I went, you know, somewhere in Wilmington, just drove out somewhere, maybe to the beach, I don't even remember. I was so excited, and I tried it again, and I went to my website, and I was like, whoa, and I went to WeatherTap. That's who we used for radar back then, weathertap.com, And my goodness, it was like, whoa, this is amazing. And, you know, I was able to update my website from the field. And that wasn't enough, though. I thought, okay, if I can do this, I can probably get a webcam from Logitech or whoever made them back then. And I bet I can send a webcam image through this air card. You know, it won't be frequent, you know, probably every few minutes or something, because the data spectrum was just, you know, not going to handle it yet, the bandwidth. And so that was the next thing I did. I went to this site that's probably extinct now called outpost.com. You guys remember that site? And I ordered a webcam in a few days. It was the precursor to Amazon, right? And I ordered a webcam and I installed it, and I could send a webcam image like every 5 minutes. Set it up, I would FTP it to my website, and voila, midsummer 2001, I've got a webcam, I've got wireless internet, I've got the Lowe's contract, you know, I've got these projects pending for New York, I've finished Georgia, or working on Georgia, I can't remember, I mean, so much going on, it was just mind-blowing. And waiting, like, okay, now... You know, now we really need a hurricane here, okay? Come on, people. Come on, weather gods. And, you know, that's a weird thing to wish for a hurricane, but it's like the fire department gets a grant, they get money from the county commissioners, whatever funding process works for a fire department, and they get a brand new $300,000 fire truck. They don't want to have to go and deal with a big apartment fire somewhere, but they want to use the truck. You know what I mean? It's like, well, you know, if there's going to be an apartment fire, at least we are well equipped. That's the more accurate way to look at it. They're not sitting around the fire station hoping for a big disaster somewhere, a plane crash, you know, a major pileup on the highway, a chemical spill. But boy, when those things do happen, they are adrenaline-driven. They know they've got the technology, the equipment, and the same thing is true in the military and in anything else where the technology and your backbone infrastructure dictates how successful you could potentially be. And that was me with the Isuzu. You know, it's a small SUV, but it didn't matter. The anemometer's on there. The pressure sensor's on there. I even think I bought a lightning detector. They sold these lightning detectors. It was like a radio frequency. It was like a little gray project box. And it had an on-off switch, and that was about it. And it had a bell, an electronic bell. It would just go ding when it detected lightning. And I don't remember, 10 miles away, whatever it was. Anything within that radius, it would, you know how when you listen to AM radio and you hear that little tsh, when there's lightning, there's a little static, you know, and you should know this. You put it on AM radio and maybe even FM, but I know it's prevalent on AM, and you hear the static discharge that lightning monkeys with the radio frequencies, and you can hear it. There's a little click. And you can hear it in people's video when lightning's about to strike real close by. There's an audible, brief click, right, you know, it's a little snap sound right before lightning strikes real close by to people that are filming thunderstorms. And this lightning detector would do the same thing. And so I was outfit with everything I could possibly get my hands on at this juncture of my intercepting career. And Jesse and I'd stayed in touch. And certainly with Eddie, Eddie was moving on. Eddie was going to probably be leaving the Project Impact program. That was wrapping up in 2001, as I mentioned. And he was going to finish up his master's work and go on into public administration. So the era of Eddie Smith, not quite over, but it was reaching its midpoint. We would hear from Eddie again a few years down the road. We'll get to that. You know, Dr. Brian Davis that I worked with, still good friend of mine, even today. But Jesse was on deck. You know, Jesse had this drive, and he was very adamant. You know, we would talk on the phone on occasion during the season, probably shared emails. I do remember Jesse bought a couple of posters from me. I used to sell these satellite pictures of hurricanes, and he bought some from me and adorned his house with my posters. And he was on deck. You know, he was ready to go if there would be an opportunity to do so. And as it turns out, you don't have to wait too long. The rather anemic 2001 season, it didn't produce a lot, but the next name up, Barry, early August 2001, and that's what I will cover in part two, because I'm going to have Jesse as my second in-person, maybe Skype. I got to figure out our schedules. Either way, Jesse will be my guest as I tackle part two of the year 2001 and Tropical Storm Barry. Very, very important on a lot of levels. Wait to hear about this. Another harrowing adventure. The first one, you'll see Jesse's like, what did I get myself into? And that's what I will cover in part two of Stories from the Hurricane Highway, the year 2001, in next week's edition. This one is, and I didn't date it, should have done that at the beginning. So this one's the 29th of January. Next week will be February the 5th, Wednesday, February 5th edition. That's what this one will be covering. When Jesse and Mark get together, incredible things happen. It'd be the start of quite a series of adventures. Where that leads to down the road, you shall see. I cannot wait. And we'll have Jesse probably back more than once. So look forward to that for next week. So there you go. That'll wrap it up. That's it for not tonight. I mean, I can't say tonight's edition because I'm actually recording this during the day, but I'm used to saying tonight for some reason, but you get the idea. The beauty of this podcast, you can listen to it whenever you want to, on any device you want to, I guess, your device of your choosing. So next week, we'll talk with Jesse, all right? As always, I appreciate, and I'm going to always say this, I don't care if it's 5-10 years from now, and hopefully we, at that point in time, have thousands of patrons, we're going to grow this, and it is because of you that I am able to do this, to support my family, to support my career now. I mean, think about it. You know, I'll just say this real quick. In those days, it was big projects, corporate sponsorships, things like that. Now we're in the era of crowdfunding and supporting creativity and what crowdfunding means. You know, crowdfunding supports music, arts, film, animation, you know, bloggers, foodies. You know, even there's a guy on Patreon, and this is how I got introduced to Patreon from one of our patrons. His name is Dan. He told me about this guy several years ago. There's a dude on Patreon who's got patrons that support his blogging about going on Royal Caribbean cruise ships. I'm not kidding. And, you know, I don't know how many patrons he's got. It's a sizable amount. But that is our world. You have the choice to support things that matter to you. And it is definitely a heartfelt thank you that I matter enough for you to support me and allow me to be able to do these projects like this podcast series that I will reiterate. It is not available anywhere outside of Patreon, and it will never be, because this is your original content that you helped to fund, and it is my way of saying thank you and giving you something unique. And I can't wait, you know, as we grow Patreon and more people come on board, they will get to see this podcast series. They'll discover it. And they'll go back and listen to the first chapters. And as this grows into several dozen episodes down the years from now, come years from now, it's really going to be amazing. So thanks for supporting it. I appreciate it more than you will ever know. And that's the truth. All right, that is it for this version, this chapter, part one of the year 2001. Thanks as always for tuning in. I am Mark Suddeth. You have been listening to Stories from the Hurricane Highway, the good old year of 2001. Where will we go next with it? Tune in next week to find out. Thanks for listening. I'll talk to you again next week.